Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, February 3rd, and it is 1:30 p.m. This is Talk on the Rock, and I'm your host, Colette Zarnicki. Coven Pettigrew created and organized a new Tlingit dance group in town. He's here to talk about it and tell us the importance and meaning behind it. You can call in to ask a question or leave a comment. The number to KSDK is 874-2345. Hi, Coven. How are you today?
Hi, Colette. I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, too. Thank you. Thanks for coming in. Could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah. Hello, my name is Coven Pettigrew, and I am born and raised in Wrangell. I am actually of Wunungak descent, but adopted into the Kiksetis.
Wonderful. Thank you. So you organized a new dance group called Chikasan. From my understanding, it means waterfall town. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. And I know the concept is like maybe a new dance group, but it's not a new thing. And I want to jump into that in a bit. And that's where the reciprocity in our culture comes from. Long ago, each clan had its own dance performances that it would do. So clans, in essence, were a dance group. We've changed over time. Our clans diminished, and for a period of time, we danced as one whole group. And there are still those times where that's appropriate, where both sides come together. For instance, the wolves and the ravens, and we're at a celebration or something. For instance, that would be perfect timing for all of our clans to coming together to dance. What we find today is that a lot of times with a traditional culture, there has to be a reciprocity to balance going on. And if we, for instance, the ku'iks and the celebrations that we do for the memorial of life, there's a reason we do those. And the initial part of that is because your opposites come and take care of you. And with that, it's coming to sit with the dead, sit with the family, sing, et cetera, provide food and for a period of time. And that's something that it's necessary for balance within the Tlingit culture. And so that's merely what we're trying to do and revitalize here, is that bring back the raven side of Wrangell, if you will, in that we will be prepared and ready anytime there's an okay that we need to be called to, and a number of people can sing the songs, for instance, instead of just one or two, as well as the dances. And yeah, we naming ourselves after Chukasan, which is the traditional first village of the ravens in the Shkatkwan or the Stikine River area. It was founded by the Kiksetis and Tiatans, and later with the Kachetis, moved in Crittenden area. It was the first raven village for the raven clans in this region. So we decided we would name it after that to honor the ancestors who originally migrated into the region.
Wow. Yeah. And how long has this been in the making?
A lifetime? No, I don't. I think that, it's been... I recently moved home, and it's been like seeing that this definitely, the wolves here are doing a great job of picking up their part of the deal. I think in a lot of cases they're on a regular basis and do some singing and dancing. And I'm trying to merely get the raven side to now pick that side of it up so that we're ready to go and holding our place in Tlingit society. And I wanted to add that it is truly a Tlingit group, and it's open to Tlingit ravens because they are the... they are who we are, but it's also, if you have a raven parent or grandparent in the group and you're a descendant and you're a wolf, you're welcome to be in it as well. We're also open to, so this is where it gets a little complicated. Tsimshian ravens are more than welcome to be part of us because they're considered the same. With the Haidas, we are wanting Haida eagles. I know that sounds odd, but Haida eagles are considered the same as Tlingit ravens. They are the same and the same when we look at the division of the two sides. And so it's open to Haida eagles as well, Taltan crows specifically, and Wunungak or Aleut people. And the reason for that is because the Kiksetis have a connection with the Wunungak or Aleut people and ownership to some of the songs. And so it's a natural fit for those folks. So all those groups are more than welcome to join us and come on down.
Wonderful. And how many dancers are there right now?
Well, we're just getting in the beginning stage of this, and we've just had some organizing meetings, so we really don't even have an attendance record yet or a number set. And it's typical of these kinds of things. In the middle of winter, it's hard to get people out. We'll wait till celebration comes, and people will come out of the woodwork at that point. But we're trying to get people prepared before that time so that when we're up on stage or representing either our Raven clans or our community, that we're doing a very honorable presentation.
Yeah, yeah. And what kind of dances will the group be learning or performing?
Well, definitely, there's, you know, in a Tlingit repertoire of music, there's many different genres of music. We'll be learning as many of those as possible. First ones that they'll be focused on are the Raven-owned songs. For instance, the big songs we sing at Kuiks. Those are songs that are fairly complicated and long, but and not a lot of people know all of the verses in them. And so that needs to be the first thing taught. And we'll be, of course, doing the shared songs that both sides use in Wrangell. And then at a certain point, we want to be able to pull in Wolves to come and teach us some of their songs so that we can hold them up at times when they need help singing.
Wonderful. Are there particular stories or lessons that the dances convey? I'm sure, of course, there is.
Yeah, I think, and again, that's definitely yes, there are everything we have in dance and in that performing arts genre, if you will, has significance, cultural meaning, and a lot of symbolism in a lot of cases. So one of the things that we're focused on right now, and we just did a presentation to that we had about 8-9 people there last week, I think on Thursday, we did a presentation on the different styles of a regalia that our ancestors wore to depict the trade songs, for instance, that they got from the Aleutians, or trade songs from the Haida country, or up in Tsimshian's, etc. Gunana, the interior people, so they love to trade for music. And with that, when they came out performing, they adapted their regalia or wore different kinds of hats and different things to represent those people, or the perception of the Tlingit perception of what those people were like. And so that's the first thing we're working on, is so that we have regalia alignment with our specific performances. So if we're coming out doing a Gunana performance, then we're going to come out looking like interior people. If we're coming out doing our Kiakon performance, we're going to come out looking like people from the Aleutians, or dressing similar to those. And that was a very old Tlingit tradition. We seem to have kind of dropped that, or mixed and matched and blended them all together. But if you look back in the old 1940s photos and from the potlatches, those great potlatches they had, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. With their regalia styles that they wore, and you'll see them in the different photo sets that they've taken.
Wow. And so what does that mean for now? Would you and the group be making like new regalia then?
We are working on. Uh-huh. So yeah, people have, a lot of folks have regalia already, and we're looking at, what do you have? How do you, for instance, if you have a button, you need a button robe. A button robe is not always worn like a loose flowing garment, though. If you have a button robe and you don't have a tunic, you will take it and tie it around you, similar to a toga in a way, for instance, for the Gunana performances. Otherwise, you just wear a tunic. But the hat is kind of the telltale there. You've seen the flat hats, for instance. Those represent the Aleutian people. You see the fur style hats. Those represent Gunana, interior people, headbands, interior again.
That's really fascinating. What do you hope participants take away from these sessions with the dance group?
What I hope to do is create a system that our children are immersed in and growing up in, and feeling really confident about who they are, and comfortable and proud of who they are. You know, I'm from the 60s and 70s, and there was a lot of shame amongst us in that generation. It was, you know, we were the first generation basically out of the boarding schools, and all of the World War II internment that happened for my people, etc. So there was a lot of trauma, I think, created for Native people, and with that we pushed away from who we truly were. But that has created lots of gaps in us as being whole people or whole communities. We're still carrying shame today. We have some Native people who don't want to associate with being Indigenous. It's just it's a sadness to see that's taken place with colonization. It doesn't have to be that way. We can walk comfortably in both worlds and be successful in the Western world and in corporate dealings, etc. I mean, the highest level of the Western world, as well as being comfortable walking into a ku'ik and knowing exactly what we're doing and where we're at and the traditions behind it. There, we should be able to walk comfortably in both. And I'm hoping that this creates that for our people and our young people. And I'll just say that dancing has got a healing component to it as well.
Yeah. Will you talk about what you know of the first actual Raven Village in this area?
Yeah, Herb Bradley or Tashi is the one who taught me, well, just what I know about it. And so when the Kiksetis, we migrated out of the Nass River originally and got lost in the fog. The fog moved out on the water for us, and we couldn't tell where we were. For days and days, they traveled in what was a northerly direction, but never found land. I think they were headed straight up the channel, actually, up the Clarence Straits. Anyways, they eventually come north of Ketchikan, and they hear a voice in the water, and it tells them, follow me, I'll take you to a place where you can start your village, and it is a place where you can thrive and flourish. And so they did. They looked over the bow, and it was a frog in the water. They followed this frog to the beach, and the frog told them this is called Kix. And so we are the ancestors of the Kiksetis, stopped there because they called themselves Gitshish before this. They landed there and they said, now we're Kiksudi, people of Kix. And so the clan grew in number there. It started getting too large. At one point, there was a dispute and a division, and hence the Teotons formed out of that clan. And then later, another group that was so big it needed more space, another group moved up around the point, Kanahadis. And those, so that shows you the fragmentation of the clan splitting. At one point, from Kix, we migrated again north with the Teotons and met up with Kachadis up here, and we settled at Mill Creek or Chukasan in Tlingit, which is waterfall town. And they loved it because of the sockeyes there. It was, before it's been changed dramatically since, from what I understand, from what Tashi told me, taught me, dramatically from its original site. You know, it was later a cannery, stuff like that, so it was changed. But that is the reason that, and since it's a Raven dance group, we wanted to honor that first group of people who migrated into the Kwan.
Yeah, wow. What does dancing mean to you personally?
Ooh, dancing is really pretty spiritual for me, I think. It connects me to my ancestors. And I know people say, oh, he's adopted Tlingit, and he's not really a Tlingit. And that's true, I'm Unangak. But I feel so blessed to be born and raised here. And, you know, Shawachuku, Marge Bird, took me into her clan, her family. It made me feel like one of her own children, actually. And so I feel just as comfortable and at home in that culture as I do my own mother's Unangak culture from the Aleutians. And even for a while, felt more comfortable in Tlingit, to be honest, because I was raised here. I did spend a huge amount of time in the Aleutians, raised my own children there, and moved to the last fluent village, Atka. In fact, is where I was residing. And while I was there, there was a big, in fact, they pulled me out. They hired me specifically because of my history in dance here. And they hired me as a teacher out there, but their big push was to revitalize Unangak dancing. And so with that, I became involved with the school project, as well as elders in the community and the school board, starting researching Unangak dancing because it was almost forgotten and lost. I hadn't been doing it since World War II in the internment. Like, my mother was brought down here in that event, and then the internment camps, a third of the population perished in the forest. It's no wonder that dancing, nobody's celebrating anything. So we worked hard in those years. I was in ATCA in revitalizing, and we used wax cylinders for a lot of the old music we had to pull off, and that was a challenge because it was done in Deep Aleut, which is the old Aleut language, and the newer language is a little bit different, and there were only two people in the village who could speak it still, which was great. There were two elders, and we pulled them in, and they translated those for us, the wax cylinders. We looked at the Russian journals, and they talked in depth about the meter of the music and all of this stuff, and then we pulled in elders who still remembered it when they were kids. We pulled a few songs out of them, and then we started composing new pieces based on what we were taught. Before we went anywhere else, we presented it to the elders, and every single one of them had tears in their eyes and said, "This is what we remember from when we were children." And so I just seeing that they weren't tears of sadness, they were tears of joy in seeing that that hope in their eyes, that something they hadn't seen since they were little had now come back in its glory. And since that time, it has spread throughout the Aleutians. Every single village out there is dancing today, including the Unangas in Anchorage. So it's, to me, it has done for that group of people a tremendous amount of healing for historical traumas that have taken place, specifically World War II.
Yeah. And how long has this revitalization been happening in the Aleutians?
It started in the late 90s, and then, you know, somewhat hit and miss in the early 80s, but then the 90s is when the district really made an effort to do that, and then that's about the late 90s, early 2000s, when they pulled me out there, and same time they pulled a person from Russia, a Koryak woman who... all of our traditional regalia was in Russia, and so we couldn't see it even. And so they hired her, and she went around to all the museums in Russia and photographed. They even let her take seams apart and photograph things and brought them back to us. And we had huge community effort in all the grandmas and moms coming down and sewing regalia, making regalia based off of what we had pulled out of Russia. From which they had originally taken from our islands, you know. So I guess the connection here is that I know that the Aleutians is different than Wrangell, but we're not different in that we've all had these historical traumas. I mean, the bombardment in Wrangell is, you know, something that is a trauma that's happened here that we have never fully healed from as well. So as well as all the missionary schools, et cetera, the boarding school, we can go on and on. But and so I see Native dance as a way to connect to our ancestors, a way to instill our traditional values, which is so important. And it definitely builds a love for your culture in youth. I mean, just to see with the Native dancing in the Aleutians with those kids, and now it's spun off into this desire to revitalize language. So it's an amazing tool. Especially with young people.
Yeah. And with the historical trauma and healing through dance, is it common to talk through that too, like with what people experience through the healing with dance?
Yeah, I think in our own circles, when we're out performing for our community, our clan, that's something we don't want to go up and cry about things. And for instance, in the Aleutian experience is a pretty traumatic one, and we start talking about it around our elders, there's definitely tears.
Yeah.
A lot of pain that comes out of that. And so it's something for a long time we didn't talk about, which is even worse. But I know that in the groups I belong to, that has always come up, the discussion of internment. In fact, one of the things one of the villages wanted to do was do a whole series of internment dances that they would create. So, but again, that's dealing with that historical trauma and trying to get past it.
Yeah, wow. Who taught you the Chukasan dances that the group will be performing?
Well, lots of folks, you know, I will give them my first credit goes to Shawachuku, March Bird, who was my teacher as a little child. And then on the opposite side was Numshi, Haynes DeWitt, who is Nanya Ayi, and who was one of my dance instructors and teachers probably a sixth grader, junior high kid in those years. My first understanding of the Kwan and the Sheikh story and how the clans were coming together was with Tommy Ukas, who, when he was carving the totem that stands at the post office, the small raven pole, he told me to sit down on the Haishanak, the woman at the bottom of the pole who holds up the world. And my dad had to go do something down at the float. He was a police officer, a trooper at the time. I think he was arresting somebody, maybe. And he asked Tommy if he could leave me with him. He was like, yeah, yeah. And he was carving that pole on the other end. And he said, have a seat on the other end of the pole there. Have a seat. I'm going to tell you a story. And he started telling me these stories. And I just remember falling in love with it and just... I feel like I couldn't, it was like gasping at air. I couldn't get enough. I was wanted more and more. And ever since that point, and I think I was in the second or third grade, because I remember after he told me that, I ran home in third grade. Mrs. MD had a book writing project, and my first story was How Chief Shakes Got His Name. And so all because of a story Tom Ukas told me. And I just kept collecting stuff. And it was when elders would tell me stuff, it didn't run out of my brain, unlike math. Math was in and out just in a wisp. The other stuff, the traditional cultural stuff, I don't know why. I was just, I wanted to just be Indian all the time. Even I'm a mixed blood. I know that. I just was so in love with being native and that culture thing that I don't know if I'm an old spirit or what, but Glenda Gillen was my babysitter. I wanted to be a Plains Indian so bad because they rode horses, and I used to take her. She's a babysitter, and I'd take her dish towels and use them as breech cloths all the time. Anyways, getting off the point. I think dance is an amazing thing, and it shows your pride in your community, your clan, your people, but it also builds relationships in the dance group. I mean, long-lasting, lifetime relationships. And so with those elders, I have to thank them, but I also learned a number of from elders up in Juneau when I moved there and went to college, left Wrangell, and that was Agnes Bellinger from Klukwan and Haynes originally, Jenny Thlunot's daughter. She ran the Eagle Raven Dancers, and then later on with Annabelle Revels from Huna and Ida Katashan from Huna, elders from Huna also, that I learned a lot of the... some of the music from up north from those folks, but a lot of Kui protocols, etc.
Yeah. Are there any dances, I'm not sure if you can answer this, but are there any dances that you're not aware of that, you know, you might learn in the future?
Is that a trick question?
No.
Yes, I think there are dances that I'm not aware of that we would love to learn in the future. And here's one, I think a perfect example of that is Tuskanakusha, which is a Kiksuti song from Wrangell. And it's one that fell out of usage for a long time, but it's been there's a recording of it, Tom Ukas and Josie Ukas singing it. And that one has recently now come back. Into our repertoire. So it's about the mountain that saved mankind during the flood, which I hate to use its English name because it's not the name in Tlingit. It's Devil's Thumb Mountain. But in Tlingit, it's Tuskanakusha, the mountain up behind Tusk.
Yeah. And how if you've only heard the song, how would you know the actions? For dance?
So, great question. In Tlingit culture, sometimes it depends on what style of song you're doing. I think you're maybe thinking of some of the up north dancing where you have a lot of hand motions. That's different style of dancing. In Tlingit culture, it's not that type of dancing. And so, for instance, if you have Shakyat dancing, it's more about your head, using your head and the dance, the headpiece on your hat for dancing. So, you're right. If there were specific dance motions to a song, if that's not recorded, then that's something you're going to have to recreate. But in a lot of cases, there are not specific motions to a certain dance, if that makes sense.
Okay.
It may be a love song for your opposites, for instance. We don't create love songs for your honeys, but it would be a love song for your if it's me, my clan composing it, it would be to the Kiksadiyadis, the children of Kiksadis. So they would not be the Kiksadis, they would be Tekwedis and Nanyais, children whose fathers were my clan, is who we'd make the love songs for. That's something that you don't have specific hand motions with. Mm. You put out your basic hands up and you're singing and you're holding them up, basically.
So. Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for that. And, you know, you mentioned on this past Thursday, you gave a presentation on the regalia. I know from the brief interactions we've had, you love history. Can you speak of anything from this area that you have seen, like in photographs or you've heard that, you know, not everybody knows, it's not fully practiced, what may have been forgotten or lost? And there's, you want to revitalize that too.
Great question. There's so much to it that needs to be revitalized, I think. And like I talked about the video, the presentation we did last week on different styles of regalia, that's the first thing I think we need to identify, because it's really a mixed match when you're coming out singing a Gunana song, which is Athabascan, and you're coming out with a cedar bark hat and a button robe that's flowing. You're not dressed, I guess, Western expression, you're not dressing for the part. I would like to get refined so that we go back to that period where we know how to dress for which performance we're doing. I think we've gotten to a stage where we mix the dances even, but we need to decide as a group, we're going to do Gunana this time, we're going to do Anaut, we're going to do Singet, we're going to do Dekina, whatever. And the other part of it I really want to see brought back is its traditional role in when we have community death, for instance. I know it's a hard subject to talk about, but it's our responsibility as opposites. When somebody perishes on the opposite clan from us, we need to gather, we need to muster, and we need to go help take care of them and hold them up. And that, you know, traditionally means we would go to their home and or in their clan house, and we would sit with their deceased, we would take care of the body, etc. I know we live in a modern time where a lot of that gets taken care of outside of the house, but there may be the wish to have, for instance, I want you to come in, instead of a 3-day vigil, I would like you to come and sit with their ashes tonight, please, before we bury or before we put them out. There's got to be modern context that we can do this in and revitalize it instead of just stopping it and replacing it with nothing, is what I'm seeing. Because even when I was a kid, those opposite practices kind of had ceased. But one of the things I remember clearly in this community, when someone died, people from the entire community took food to that house, and everybody in this community would spend time stopping by that home and visiting. And so I think that's part of evolving. That was something that evolved out of that originally. So I just want to see us return to that more community support and holding each other up. Because again, that with Tlingit culture, that reciprocity, that balance is so essential in order to keep a flourishing group or flourishing human beings.
Yeah, definitely. Are there any upcoming performances or community events that Chikasan will be at?
No, they haven't learned the dances and songs. No, we haven't scheduled any performances. We're in this just in their infancy stages of talking about celebration. So
right, but celebration is definitely, it's coming this June, I believe, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay, so will you talk about when the group meets and just remind us who can join that group?
Yeah, so Chukasan meets, so right now it's meeting at the Head Start, old Head Start built by the school, and it meets on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6 to 8 o'clock. On Tuesdays, It's basically the raven dance, the raven dancer. So ravens and the lists of people. So all Tlingit ravens, Haida eagles, Unangas, Taltan, Unangas or Aleuts, Taltan crows, Haida eagles. I said that, I think, and Tsimshian ravens. All welcome to join this group on Tuesdays and come and learn the songs and practice with us. Excuse me. Learn the songs and practice with us. We won't be there this Tuesday because it's tribal council meeting tonight, but we'll be there next. And then on Thursday night, it's not just the Chickasaw dancers. It's they're hosting this. It's open to anybody in any of the groups that wants to come and just sew on regalia. Or if they have questions, there's people there. Like the other night, Thursday, we had presentation, but we also, everybody there had art projects they're working on or regalia projects. So, and it's a great time to come and share ideas, or if you need help on, hey, I don't know how to make a yoke, or I need help making a flat hat. People there, quite a bit of knowledge amongst the group. So it was and a great place to come and get inspired as well.
Wonderful. Thank you for coming on. Is there anything else you want to say?
I just would like to say, I would like to encourage everybody to really consider this and please come. It's open. And I'd really like to see us come out of here with a really strong, powerful dance group that I want to see people's jaws drop when they see us dance and perform and hear us. I think that the songs are so powerful, and when they're sung with a good number of people, it just amps it all up. And here's the thing, you don't have to be, in order to sing our traditional songs, you don't have to belong to a famous choir or anything like that. You don't even have to know how to read music. I don't. And so our ancestors did it for thousands of years without those things, and we're going to continue. So yeah, come down and join us. We'd love to have you with us.
Wonderful. Thanks again. Gunas Chish.
Gunas Chish Hawa Karasakuk.
That was Coven Petticrew talking about the new, not new, but a dance group, Chickasaw.